alive. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer some of the questions of why. This vlogcast started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect when some people on Facebook that knew me from high school complained that I was correcting stuff that they were posting that was wrong, and I was doing it wrong because I was telling them how to do it when they want to do it the way that they want to do it. So their way of doing it is right because my way of doing it is wrong because I want to do it my way and they want to do it theirs. And yeah, part of this is also to go with the old adage of sometimes a journey is more important than the destination. I'm known as Shujin Tribble all over the place. It's real difficult to miss me if you Google me under Twitter, Facebook, G+, all over the place. I was born into a Roman Catholic family in Brooklyn, New York, raised on Long Island. I currently identify as an unabashed atheist. On the round table tonight is Dallin.
Good evening, folks. Online, I'm known as Dallin. Twitter handle is Robotech Tiger. Born and raised in northern Canada, born to a Lutheran family, but with a bit of a twist in that religion was not that important a part of my life. And my parents always told me, never stop questioning, always be willing to learn, and keep an open mind. This has served me well in my travels throughout my entire life. And I was really content to simply live and let live as far as religion went until I started to see what fundamentalists were doing to my friends south of the border. And I realized at that point it was time to take a side. And then, so as a result, I decided to throw in with the side of rationality, non-belief, and common sense. And that's why I'm here tonight.
Specially guesting on is Heretic Woman. Welcome back, hon.
Thank you. Thank you. So as you see, I go as Heretic Woman. Twitter handle's there too. I'm from Southern Ontario in Canada as well. Started out in the United Church of Canada, which is one of the more liberal sects of Protestant Christianity. Then I got suckered into some Calvinist stuff, which is real fun. Figured it all out by the time I was 17 and got the hell out. And, you know, I sort of like Dallin, lived in a bit of a comfortable atheist bubble for a while because no one really cares here. But that it's time for us to get active and do things. And like I said, he said, you know, what the fundamentalists are doing, we need to get out and try and affect a change as well. So that's what I'm doing.
And also Joe.
Howdy, folks. Just realized that my little title thing actually got deleted at some point courtesy of Google. So, oh well. Name's Joe. Born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, under a Roman Catholic family. Signed up with the military right out of high school. Did 8 years. Currently living as a illustrator in Pittsburgh. Currently, I follow no religion whatsoever. So, yeah, atheist.
Okay. Thank you all for taking the time to watch the show. This is episode number 41? Yeah, 41. Which means that we almost have the answer to why Twilight Sparkle is such a dork, but that's a whole other thing for another time. And I'm making that reference because the title that I decided to go with for this week is The Great and Powerful Yahweh, because the Pope apparently doesn't understand that if you're going to talk about something groundbreaking, you should really talk about something that people haven't really talked about before. Deistic evolution is an old story, dude, and we're going to kind of play around at his expense for the whole damn thing. But as has become typical at this point, I'm going to go ahead and start us off with normally would be called the 5-minute freestyle, but I'm not going to use the timer this time because this may take just a little bit longer, and truthfully, you might want to follow along. If you happen to be lucky enough to have some kind of Bible reference for the moment, I'm going to be using the NIV version, the New International Version. And you could just open up to the very first page, because I'm going to be talking about Genesis. And before anybody starts going ahead and making Star Trek references, screw you.
Genesis?
I had something pop up into my head while I was driving, doing deliveries for the job that I normally do, which, you know, when your head gets the opportunity of just kind of bopping around with a whole bunch of things, it's amazing what stems up. And I came up with something that really screwed me up because it's twisted everything that I ever thought about the Bible on its ear. Now, I don't know if this has ever been brought up by anybody before, but I'm not a theologian. I'm not very well read, and truth be told, I'm not really that smart in a lot of respects. But I've never heard this place this way before, and I feel like it kind of puts some weird things in perspective. Now, I'm kind of taking this on the standpoint that we're going to end up talking with people who do actually believe the Bible, or minimally believe in their religion, and the Bible's kind of an afterthought, as we Roman Catholics will tell you, why bother reading? You're only going to get the pieces that you need when you go to Mass. But something started niggling in my head, and I needed to try to thresh this one out, and it seems to make sense to me. Going by the very beginnings of it all, chapter one, right off the bat, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. All right, so that's generally accepted doctrine that everything, every last little thing, there was nothing, and then there's something, which William Lane Craig says you're not allowed to get nothing from something from nothing, but that's, you know what, we'll give him that one. For right now, we'll give him that one, although it's a giant middle finger to him, but be that as it may. Skip ahead a little bit. 25. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, whatever the hell that's supposed to mean, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. Then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and all the creatures that move along the ground. Okay, so the groundwork is laid. Everything that could be is now poofed into existence, piece by piece by piece, one after the other after the other. I got no problem with this. Laying this out right now, I don't have a problem with this piece right here. As we understand full well, man is now about to be made. Now, of course, as we know full well, man and woman in one spot, man then woman in another, and man and Lilith, or man and Eve, whatever. There's a whole bunch of different things on this one, but for the moment, let's just grant that this makes sense so far. Let's just grant that this is true just for right now. Going to Gen 2, 16. And the Lord God commanded the man, you are free to eat from any tree in the garden. We're familiar with this part. But you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat from it, you will certainly die. Very specific and implicit. For when you eat from it, you will certainly die. Now, as we know full well, that isn't exactly the way that it plays out. Continuing. Now, the Lord God had formed out of the ground all the wild animals and birds and blah, 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 blah. So man gave name to all the livestock, blah, 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 blah. No suitable helper was found, which means Adam, with the companion to speak with him, who is the creator of everything, the knower of everything, is not a good enough companion. That in and of itself started to get me working in my head. I wasn't specifically reading this, of course, on the road or listening to this particular piece, but it something caught on me on this one. Continuing on from 22. So Lord God caused a man to fall into deep sleep, and after having the roofie, he goes ahead, he does a little bit of psychic surgery, takes out a piece of bone. Boom, we've got woman. Okay, doesn't have a name because, well, woman. Whatever. Adam and his wife. Okay, so where was the ceremony? Oh, right, whatever. Oh, the piece for later. And they were both naked. They felt no shame. And why would you? Going to Gen 3. Now the serpent was more crafty than any of the wild animals the Lord God had made, which means he made this one too. Now, we're not going to dispute this one either. We're going to take this one. He said to the woman, did God really say, you must not eat from any tree in the garden? Woman said to the serpent, "We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say you must not eat the fruit of the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it, or you will die." "You will not certainly die," the serpent said to the woman, "for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." Okay, so we've heard this one before, the temptation of Eve to try and say, "Hey, look, follow me." When the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. Which means, at this point in the story, Eve has gone ahead and said, "Well, there's fruit here, and it looks a lot like a fruit over here, which is nourishing and good for us, and this looks to be about the same. But that seems to have an added benefit. You're telling me that I won't die, and that this has got something extra involved with it." He says, "I will die, so I shouldn't do it. Let me test for myself. Follow me on this one a second." Eve now qualifies as the very first skeptic and scientist and researcher. Follow me on this a second. Her very next action, after making the determination of let me find out for myself, is to take and bite of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, infusing her, according to accepted story, that she now understands the difference between good and evil. She, minus a day, has gone through the Garden of Eden with Adam. They've shared time. They've spoken with God. They've interacted. They know all of what there is to know at this point in the story. Here's what caught me. She is the first skeptic. She's the first researcher. She's the first scientist. And she is the first one to make a value judgment based on the knowledge of good and evil and decided for herself. Following God's command is less good than sharing the knowledge of good and evil with the only other sentient in existence. God was not as important a good as sharing the knowledge. She made a value judgment and said, "I need to do this." Now, how can I say that that was the better good? Because if she wanted to be evil, she would have been keeping the information for herself. And she would have been able to use it for her own over Adam, who would not know any better. Now, as we know full well, continuing on with the story, God was not able to kill them, only to kick them out. Now I've got a question. Is it that God was unable to because he said he was willing to? How many people is God actually credited with directly killing? We've got the flood where he could have just as easily killed everyone, but instead he changed the parameters of weather. Now, if you accept it as true, but be that as it may, there are events that could have been other than actually killing the individual. The parting of the Red Sea could have been viewed as changing temporarily the local gravitational attraction. A thin strip on either side where the people could walk. If the gravitational attraction was changed to be 180 degrees off, that would shove up the water into the air and then turn it back again, crashing down. Again, if you take the story as literal truth, how many times has God actually gone ahead and just zapped somebody? It's damn few when you really get down to it. So here's the question. Is it a matter of that God is as omnipotent as everyone is always credited to be? or is God a petulant programming child running an experiment in God mode that doesn't really care so much about the good or the bad, so much as the pay attention to me, I'm important, because the whole time after the Garden of Eden story, it's not about redemption ending in Jesus. It's about obedience. Do what I've told you to do, or I will find a way of hurting you and killing you. And then when that finally doesn't happen, all right, fine, here's Jesus. I don't care. Look, just, you know, do whatever you want. That's fine. You can just follow me or not. And a whole passive-aggressive address. The Bible no longer becomes something of redemption when you get to the New Testament. It gets to be, I am important. Why aren't you paying attention to me? Mankind was not fallen. If you follow the story, mankind was redeemed from the very, very second person to come out to say, I wonder who's right. Heretic woman, I wanted you in on this one because all of the ills of humanity had been laid according to Christian doctrine at the feet of womankind. Now, how do you feel about it?
I think that's a really interesting perspective, actually. I hadn't thought of that before, but I think you're right, because if she knows what's good and evil, and there's never been any indication that either one of them were ever evil, so she's obviously made the choice what was the greater good. And so, to me, that makes much more sense. So we kind of been shafted. Well, we already were shafted, but now it's like, wow, you guys are really, like, thanks. It's ridiculous, really, that... And the other argument that I've always thought of, too, is if at the time that she made the choice to eat the apple, she did not know what was good or evil, then how can you blame her for anything?
That's true, and I've heard that one many times over also, and mm-hmm. it never made any sense to me, too.
Yeah,
but that's why the second piece suddenly started to make a hell of a lot more sense.
Yeah, it does.
We'll see what happens when Joe gets back a second. Dallin, you've had a few extra Christian pieces to go along with in different areas. Mm-hmm. How about you? Have you even heard something close to this one?
Not even close. And, well, like Heretic Woman said, it's a very fresh perspective on things. Although I think the interpretation of evil in this respect is the supposed, you can't talk to God anymore. Like, you can't just, you know, get up in the morning and say, hey, God, how's it going? And then expect him to actually, you know, answer you. So... And I think that's where it's a lot of it's been carried forward. But yeah, the first skeptic, the first critical thinker, that's...
Yeah.
That's a new one. I got to say, that is a new one. And I could just see every single apologist. And I'm sorry, but I got that Feuerstein guy. This is in my head. Because the guy's been around like freaking... internet herpes lately. But yeah, just see them all rolling their eyes at this one. The thing is that your argument makes a hell of a lot more sense than about 99% of the apologist arguments I've been listening to lately.
And I appreciate that. Like I said, I had not heard this particular take.
No.
I mean, I've heard the, she couldn't have known, so how could you blame her? But I'd never heard it going one step before that. You know, the whole, okay, we can see to the Big Bang a couple of seconds after the Big Bang happens, but we can't quite see. We can see milliseconds after, but we can't see at the moment of. We don't know. We can't see just before it. And it just caught on me. Why haven't we gone to just before? The why of what made it happen, and which is, the entire purpose of this video system.
Yeah. Well, okay, if you want to take a shot at the Big Bang, it's just the fact that we don't have the mathematics to pull it off yet.
Yeah.
It'll be
freaking amazing if we ever do.
Well, Lawrence Krauss came relatively close with his... Now, unfortunately, Krauss comes up against guys like William Lane Craig, the whole, y'all can't get something from nothing. Pardon the Southern accent, but I'm sorry, I'm playing the stereotype. Yeah, kind of sorry, not sorry, but anyways, to my point, Craig says, well, you can't get something from nothing. And then along comes Higgs boson with this gigantic middle finger saying, really? Yeah, I think so. Well, have I got news for you? But yeah, it's that's the whole thing, is that just right now, yeah, we're getting closer to the milliseconds, to all of that. We just don't have the mathematics to push that extra limit yet.
And that's the big piece.
Well, hey, in Newton's day, we didn't have the mathematics for a lot of the stuff we have today. So that's true. It could take another century. It could take another Krauss 100 years from now to pierce that veil.
And we'll have to see where that goes with Joe. First off, welcome back. You done chewing?
Yeah. So Windows decided to send me a little message and say, you know what, your screen needs a little more blue.
Nice.
It was blue.
Fortunately, death.
Yes. So now that you're back, I'm assuming that you pretty well got to hear the almost the entirety of it all.
Mostly, left off at the latter half of your Eve was the first scientist bit.
Okay. So, real quick recap off of it. She made a value judgment that looks the same as that. This is nutritious. That should be, you say that this has got a little bit more. Let me check it out for myself. And the redemption is that the second human was the first person to actually make a value judgment, which one should I believe? And her very first action with new knowledge of good and evil is that...
share the knowledge.
Right.
Yeah, I caught that much. There was nothing major after that.
Basically that womankind has, through Roman Catholic doctrine, has been attributed with all the ills because of all that.
And yet,
because of her, humanity is actually redeemed in choosing for itself properly, and that... And I'm trying to remember where it goes. And this whole thing now reduces God to being effectively a petulant programmer boy who will change various parameters but can't actually kill the intendeds. Now, Chris, who is over there on the Q&A, by the way, and thank you for part of that. I have not had the opportunity of really looking through to vet out all of this stuff. But my point is that God isn't as powerful as originally thought, that if he really wanted to go ahead and kill, he could do. And it, changing the value parameters of weather for the flood, changing the gravitational constant for the Red Sea to part it and then crash it down. Maybe God is just a petulant, pay attention to me, in the Old Testament of, do obedience or I will hurt you, and then come along Jesus and he's just a petulant emo kid who's passive aggressive about it all.
There was a show, I wish I could find its title, because I saw it once. It was like one of those things you see on a Saturday on like TLC, back when TLC actually showed stuff that you could learn from, back when it was the Learning Channel. Excuse me. But and you see, kind of where you're going and kind of where Pope, I don't know, should we take a page from the Scathing Atheist and try to do that? Or
you think you can? Go right ahead.
give me some time and a little more booze, and maybe I'll come up with something later on in the show. But anyways, the whole thing about Frankie doing the whole deistic evolution thing, and you're saying it's not a new concept, but you're right. You know, I may not be the oldest guy in the world, and I'm definitely not as old as that individual, but no, I used to think that too. Like, you know, well, maybe God's guiding things, but like the programs in the Matrix, he has to follow the rules too. Now, mind you, I was 9 when I came up with this thought, so I've grown up a little bit since then. Okay, now that I've circled the drain a few times here, back to my point. There was a show that talked about a lot of the phenomena that happened in that allegedly happened in the Old Testament. And what they were doing is they were going to where they believed these phenomena took place to see, is there something there that could kind of sort of explain it if you followed the rules of the Matrix? The burning bush, apparently there is a type of plant in that area that secretes an oil that is very volatile, but like the theatric gel that, you know, used to supposedly put someone on fire, it'll burn, but it won't consume the bush itself. It just burns off the oil, kind of like burning alcohol.
Okay.
The Red Sea, in particular the Sea of Reeds, which I believe is where they allegedly crossed. Now, this one's a bit of a stretch given the fact, you know, we're talking a couple of thousand years and, you know, sand does not exactly stay static.
I heard.
Yeah. However, apparently the topography of the floor of the Sea of Reeds is as such that a gale force crosswind hitting it at the right angle could expose the bottom and allegedly allow people to cross.
Here's the issue that I have with that, because mm-hmm. I owe my understanding of that one to Penn and Teller.
Mm-hmm.
If they crossed at the Reed Sea,
mm-hmm.
then what's the miracle? That the dried up marsh smell didn't, you know, give them nausea? If it's not a miracle, then why go on about it?
Yeah, no, you're right. Again, just, you know, don't shoot the messenger here.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But it would look like a miracle if you didn't really understand what was happening. Like if you're a Bronze Age nomad.
Yeah, but maybe Moses was actually, maybe was like a master meteorologist. You know, he's standing on the shore, like kind of going, oh, there's a wind coming. Okay, I'm going to put my staff up right now. Right now. So what he does is he like proselytizes to the people kind of in a delay to get this gale force wind to blow up.
Right.
Finally, you know. But there was a third one this is just what I remember, and it had to do with Jericho. Now, of course, we all know the, you know, let's run around in a circle going la la la, blow the trumpets, and then on that one day, it's all going to fall down. Well, in the supposed area around where Jericho was or is, or I'm not sure, they were able to find what looked like ancient fault lines. Now look, I can hear you all rolling your eyes on this one. I'm just telling you what I saw on this show. But, you know, and it is kind of too bad that apologists and other people like that don't have that kind of savvy anymore to pull off shows like that, because that particular one, to me, at the time, was very convincing.
I believe the show that you are remembering is a show called Decoding History, and that particular episode was The Bible. Just that's the title of that particular episode is Decoding History, The Bible.
Okay.
It's entirely possible.
Well, I might go searching for it. But again, what it would kind of sort of show would be something along the same lines of the deistic evolution that, you know, Frankie Boy's talking about, in that it's trying to show that a divine hand is working through the rules of nature to you know, exert its will or whatever.
But then that negates the entire idea of omnipotence.
And that's where the whole title got started from. And I'm going to get back to that in just a second.
If it's not omnipotent, it's not God.
No, well, you're right. You're right.
It's part of it. Joe, since we kind of got sided on that one just a second, I didn't finish getting from you what your take on the opening would happen to be now that you've got a pretty good idea as to where it was. Because you and me, I mean, Roman Catholicism doesn't change very much from region to region. There are some different pieces, of course, but we were always taught, you know. I'm sorry?
We just lost Heretic.
Okay, we'll get her back. We'll get her back.
But I see what you're getting at, and my take on it, now, first of all, I'm not going to badmouth Pope Francis, because as far as I'm concerned, he's a pretty good guy, he's doing what he can with what he's got, and compared to popes of the past, this guy's a freaking game changer. And I have pretty high respect for this individual. More so than I could say for most others that have sat in that seat.
I think you're just saying that because he's got had a Harley. Yeah. Anyway.
I do know that he had a Mercedes-Benz before he became the Pope. And when he became the Pope, he donated it.
Well, it's something that I suppose. Anyway.
But my take on it, let me put it this way. When I was a practicing Catholic, even then, I did not buy into the entire poof and, you know, suddenly the world as we know it today was here.
Poof, there it is.
When I was a child, I was huge on science and scientific history, in fact. Anything to do with, you know, anthropology, paleontology. I, you know, every book I could get my hands on, I read it. And when the idea of the Big Bang Theory had come to my mind, I think I was probably about, I don't know, 10, 11. At the time, still a practicing Catholic, which isn't saying much considering, yeah, I was 10 or 11 years old. But even then, my train of thought was, okay, if there is such a thing as the whole creation story, it would make sense that, you know, if there's a God, it would make sense that his act in this entire creation story could easily be something as simple as, you know, the Big Bang. For a while, I had the idea that think of it as God being a, you know, a being like you or me. When did you have your first cognitive thought? Think of it as, and this questions the nature of God. Yeah, I was doing this as a preteen. What if when God, you know, say God had an infancy just like any normal person does. What if when he finally had that moment of clarity, that first cognitive thought, if a being as semi-omnipotent as God had such a thought, would it not be possible that, you know, the simple whisper of I am, just that I am, kicked off the Big Bang?
Interesting.
That was my train of thought as a child. My way of merging the ideas of, you know, creation along with, you know, scientific observation and evolution and all that. And then I enlisted. And I can think of, you know, I've paraphrased the show before, but there's a show from the folks over at Showtime, the same producers who created Band of Brothers. They created another show called The Pacific. Very much the same premise, but, you know, instead of the European theater, it was the Pacific theater, obviously. There's a moment where at the main camp, two of the soldiers are speaking in what they call the library. They've got a bunch of, you know, books there. And one soldier picks up the Bible. So the guy that's running the library says, "Oh, I see. You're a believer." "Well, yeah, I suppose. Let me ask you something. God's supposed to be all-powerful, right?" "Yeah, omnipotence. And he's supposed to know everything we do before we do it, right?" "Yeah, predestination." "And yet, if that's the case, why the game? Why give us the idea of free will if you already know what we're going to do?" "Well, that's the whole thing, is that God gave us the free will." "All right. So God created everything, right? The heavens, the earth, the birds, the bees, grass." "And pardon the language, but this is just the terminology that was used for the show, and it was a very different time then." But the soldier I'm remembering, or the Marine, pardon me, I remember saying, "He created Japs too, right? Little yellow slants who have tried to kill me and my friends on many an occasion." "See, the way I figure it, either God's an idiot, or he's a sadist. And he's either incompetent or he's a sadist. And either way, I ain't got time to be wasting on him." And that was essentially my train of thought. Probably my first or second deployment at that point.
Understood. Heretic Woman, you are back, are you?
Yes. I switched browsers, and this appears to be working.
And what browser are you using now?
One called Avant.
Okay.
I was not expecting that answer, but hey, as long as it works, run with it.
Yes. Never heard of it. Another time.
Okay. So everybody's up to speed, by the way, because this Hangouts is getting its opportunities on a couple of different areas, not the least of which for us, of course. I think there is another one Atheist on Air has used it in the past during their show live. There is there are a couple of other groups that have done it, but Google Hangout for the fact that it is free, and it's free is one of its big things, and its integration with YouTube, it does have its quirks, unfortunately. And I don't believe that it's necessarily with Google's programming itself so much as interacting with so many different things simultaneously. Video encoding, live video encoding, audio encoding, streaming through a server and simultaneously to different desktops or whatever at the same time. Hellaciously technically dependent. So if every once in a while, if you ever decide to do your own thing, it's a good system. It's not exceptional, but it's good. Right. Especially considering, you know, trying to set something like this up, Dallin would know full well, trying to set something like this up with all the different pieces is hellaciously technically challenging and I would assume pretty expensive.
Yeah, it's an understatement. One of my older jobs, we actually started breaking into the audit to the video conferencing market.
Yeah, I remember.
Trying to integrate, believe it or not, furniture with technology. It sounds crazy, but the company I used to work for, we pulled off some pretty neat stuff. But one of the things we did work with was we worked with two major video conferencing companies. I won't mention them here. Needless to say, I went through one of their sales training programs to see what's available. And yeah, what you can get is beautiful, like full HD condenser mics that, you know, make it sound like you're in, you know, it gives you that nice intimate feel.
Seth Andrews quality is what you're saying. Well,
yeah, I can run with that. Although in Seth's defense, those kind of audio hookups are actually available. You can go to like any music store. I can go to one of about four here in town. If I'm willing to drop about $1,000, I could get a pretty damn good audio system. But anyways, that being said, looking at, you know, high quality video conferencing, stuff like that, you are not going to get it for cheap.
No.
And I do hate to say this. Well, actually, I don't hate to say this, but we're not the only Hangout-based vlogcast out there right now.
No.
Aaron Raw, one of my idols in this whole world, has started off with the Raw Men podcast, pun intended. I've listened to it a little bit. Well, of course, this guy's had more time behind a microphone than just about any one of us here. So he does a really good job of it. And one of our old frequenters of the show, Truthmonger, I don't know if you remember him or not. Mm. I actually started following him on Google+. And he is showing links to tons of Hangout-based vlog casts. Unfortunately, they are all the direct opposite of what we do here. So he sort of adds his own, you know, 2 cents / ad hominem attack on the certain people in there. But no, this is a trend that's catching on.
Which is good, which I know for Willow we're very different from everybody else's, so that's okay. Anyway, so backtracking a little bit, why did I choose the title for this episode of The Great and Powerful Yahweh? Yes, for some people who do understand it, yes, it is a direct ripoff from the new My Little Pony series that started up a couple of years ago, and I make no bones about it whatsoever. People who have known me for a while know for well, I like the show. My daughter likes the show. And a whole bunch of other things. But the reason for using that title in particular is because of the attribution of the phrase. Now, on the TV... I'm sorry, Joe?
Well, when I first saw it, I thought you were actually ripping off The Wizard of Oz, which made just as much sense.
Which well, is...
It's kind of the same thing, really.
Pretty much. Now, on... As we know full well from The Wizard of Oz, the great and powerful Oz famously told us to not look at the man behind the curtain, which, admittedly, a lot of people would be thinking of. But in this case, I was thinking a little bit differently, obviously. With the My Little Pony tie-in, one of the characters is known as Trixie, who is a magical performer. She does tricks. She is a magician.
Prestidigitation.
Prestidigitation, another good word for it. But she is a performer. Now, the reason why I decided to use this one is because of what the Pope had come out saying, which was the whole purpose of this, that we shouldn't think of God as a magician with a magic wand who can just poof, there it is. And yes, I'm vaguely stealing off from Aladdin. because we shouldn't be thinking of God in those terms. Now, here's where I really want to go ahead and play around with. If not the great and powerful Yahweh who can just... What is the ability that God is supposed to have then? If it is not magic, what the hell does it qualify as?
Well, and if it's not magic, then what's the point? Why is he there?
Exactly. Exactly so. I mean, the typical concept of magic is something is simply willed to be through no other machination whatsoever. It simply was or wasn't, and then it is or isn't, as the case may be. Make me a ham sandwich. I would do that for you, except I'm Jewish. Sorry. So, what the hell does it qualify as? I mean, who even wants to even try to make any kind of head or tails out of all this?
Well, and so here's the thing. If God is not a magician and he can't just make stuff happen, why are people praying to him? What good is that going to get you if he actually can't do what you're asking?
What have you got?
No, it's just she had to bring up the prayer thing, and I'm thinking, I'm thinking George Carlin's skit.
You know who I worship? The sun. The sun's always been there for me. Gives me warmth, gives me food, gives me everything I need. But you know what? I don't pray to the sun. You know why? I don't want to presume on our friendship. It's not nice. You know who I pray to? Joe Pesci. You know why? Because Joe Pesci seems like a guy that can get things done.
That's right. That is most so true. So then comes the fun part, because if you're going to go ahead and bring up the prayer aspect, why bother praying? As a Roman Catholic, and I think Joe can back me up on this one.
Oh dear.
You don't pray to God, you don't pray to Jesus, you pray to his mom. Because as any Catholic will tell you, the mom gets a bug in her ear, she will make things happen. Isn't that right? Isn't that what you were told?
Wait.
Tell me I'm wrong.
Hold on here. Back this up. So, now, okay, I've only ever been, three Roman Catholic churches in my life. Mm-hmm. 3 days out of my very long life. Mm-hmm. One was for the military, and two were for weddings.
Very, very long hours that you spent in those, my friend.
Oh, okay. But
technically speaking, you've been in four, but one of them was less for prayer and more for imbibing.
Man, brother.
You want to talk about the Holy Spirit, man? You get it right there, right?
Oh, hell yes. And I cannot wait to get back out there.
Drunken monk.
So anyway, you're about to say.
I got to tell you, the coconut stout, you got to try it. Just live a little. Lord Guinness will forgive you. Trust me on this one. Anyways, to my point. So in Catholicism, you're praying to the mother. You're praying to the Virgin Mary, to the Madonna.
Mm-hmm.
You're praying to a woman.
Woman. That's now, what I was thinking.
So you're praying to the gender that allegedly got humanity kicked out of the Garden of Eden. Is anyone else seeing the contradiction here?
Oh, yeah. Huge.
Okay. I mean, now, Shujin, sometimes you're about as easy to read as the Quran, but when it comes to reading your face, I can never tell if you're serious or not. So are you actually praying to Mary in a Roman Catholic church?
Joe? Go ahead.
At times, yes. There, you know,
But aren't there like a bazillion saints that people pray to
exactly.
as well?
Exactly, and that's another thing that, you know, differs the Roman Catholic Church from, say, the Eastern Orthodox or the Protestant sect, of which, you know, umbrella term.
Yeah.
They don't recognize sainthood. They don't recognize the Virgin Mary.
No.
Right.
So,
and, yeah, so for the Roman Catholics, yes, you have your prayers that you, generally speaking, you don't talk to God, the top of the triumvirate. You will typically talk to, and I'm using very large air quotes here, talk to Jesus, but you will mostly be attentive towards Mary because she is not your she is not your typical mortal. She is somewhere between human and quasi God herself because she was the chosen vessel. Or is that Wessel? I forget which pronunciation it is. But the idea is that you talk to her because she is supposed to be the intermediary between us lowly mortals and the demigod that was Jesus that decided that he wanted to find an easier way of playing the harmonica, I guess. I don't know.
Wow. This actually hit a plot point for some of the writing I've been doing lately. And here I thought I had an original thought, only to find out, damn it, the Catholics had thought about it thousands of years ago. Shoot. Oh, well. Anyways.
It's all right. But, yeah, it's weird that way. So, again, going by the old standards, you know, Mary is supposed to have been virginal, although depending as to who you talk to, maybe it just means that she was just young, depending as to translation, verbiage, etc. But it's not exactly an original story either. But really, we're gonna go into the idea that she's really that big a deal? I mean, Joe mentioned it. You know, the Catholics and the Protestants don't agree on these pieces. And there's sticks of TNT that have been detonated over the millennia up there, especially in the British Isles, over exactly these kinds of contentions. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, because personally, whatever. It's just me. So, okay. So, it isn't a magician. Okay, so we'll go with that. We'll go with Frank and Beans and say that, okay, it's not a magician. I was going to say musician. Listen to me. I'm doing it. It's not a magician. Okay, so then that means that, and here's the whole reason why I got started on this one. All right, not a magician? Okay. You raped Mary. What other answer is there? Heretic woman, I told you were going to be important.
Yes.
So there it is.
Well, and it depends, because if there's nothing about that. So, I mean, we could theorize that, hey, they had a fling. You never know. But it does really, like Zeus, you know, Zeus was always raping women all over the place.
Wait a minute. We can't exactly call it rape. I mean, come on. Swans are gorgeous animals. And really, if it isn't a shower of gold, it's a Neiman Marcus card. Come on.
Those things, those swans are vicious things, man. They'll bite you. But
let's not get into my private life.
Right? So,
have you guys ever seen, there is an old cartoon out there that talks about what Mormonism is like. And they have a scene in there where they actually, because they believe God is like a man, and God like comes and knocks on Mary's door, and she opens the door, is like, ooh, and then they cut away, and it's obvious God went for a booty call.
Oh, sorry guys, my mind just went to a really, really bad place. Shall we turn up the mockery a little bit more?
Out with it.
All right. Just follow me on this one, because the normally quiet Canadian guy is about to speak, and it ain't gonna be pretty.
Lay it on us, brother.
All right. From a biological standpoint, physiological standpoint, the mark of a virgin is the hymen, the maidenhead.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay.
I personally wouldn't know. I don't think I've ever seen one myself.
Okay. No. Fine. You know, again, we all go off speculation. At least those of us in the male persuasion who aren't gynecologists just can go off speculation here. Anyways, so then we follow, let's say, you know, the knock-knock, the booty call.
Yes.
So all I'm thinking now is maybe God ain't quite got the equipment to, you know, get in that far, but could still, you know. You know what I'm saying?
It doesn't work like that.
He's one step above a Ken doll, you're saying?
Yeah, one step above a Ken doll, but still has enough force, shall we say, to, you know, do the impregnation thing.
Doesn't quite work like that, but on the subject of what...
I thought it was a turkey baster, but...
I was thinking that.
On the subject of what I've been touching on earlier, I want to play a game with you all.
Really? Did you have to go ahead and say touching on? Really?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
With all this talk about Catholicism, you know.
I want to play a game with you all. I'm going to describe someone, and you tell me who it is.
All right.
Okay.
Ready?
No. Go ahead.
Okay. So, born on December 25th to a virgin, considered the savior who was slain for the salvation of mankind. His body as bread was eaten by his worshippers. He was both divine son and the father. Crucified on a Friday, his holy blood ran down to redeem the earth. He descended into the underworld, and after 3 days was resurrected.
Now, is that Osiris or Mithras?
That's Attis of Phrygia, Greek guy.
Okay.
Damn, I was going to go with Newton personally, but okay, close enough.
So, ready for the next one?
Sure.
Born of a virgin, the only begotten son of God, birth heralded by the star Sirius, the morning star, worshippers paraded a manger and child representing him through the streets at the time of the winter solstice, December 21st. Received death threats during infancy. Died, went to the underworld, resurrected after 3 days. Crucified, went to the underworld, resurrected after 3 days.
Okay, Dallin, I can name that demigod in 3 civilizations.
Name that demigod.
Fuck, really?
Horus.
Yeah.
Damn, I was trying to figure...
The list goes on. Zoroaster or Zarathustra. Yeah. Glycon. Heracles. Dionysus. Romulus. Odysseus. Krishna.
And the beat goes on.
Yeah, no kidding.
So let's kind of expand this one a little bit, because you've got all this. Which one of them are magicians, and which one of them are actual gods? Which one do we go with, and which one do we follow? What's been said so far? I mean, you got the list of them over there, and that list goes on and on and on and on. You said, right?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I don't fool. I've seen
there are a lot more than what are just on this list, but
oh yeah,
It seems to me that the great and powerful is really little more than a great and powerful version of a Frankenstein monster. No, but I mean, and we understand that. I mean, the Roman Catholic Church, when it first got started, like I'm talking back in Constantine's day, when the Holy Roman Empire was first born and they were trying to spread their influence, they were assimilating cultures left and right and trying to make rituals that civilizations have embraced for time immemorial to put a brand new Catholic bend on it. And that's why you see a lot of what you see these days.
Not quite. You mixed things up a little bit there.
Okay.
Constantine actually founded what we know today as the Eastern Orthodox Church because he was at odds with the Pope in Rome, which is why he moved the capital of the Roman Empire from Rome to Byzantium, which then became Constantinople, which
screw you, man. That's right.
It's not
my
fault. However,
my fault.
He did not found the Holy Roman Empire. The Holy Roman Empire, which was not holy, was not Roman, and was not an empire.
Hmm.
Thank you, John Green.
Welcome. And by the way, Heretic Woman, this whole thing stems from one of the shows that I used to produce, which was the Flashback Newscast. It was a half-hour wrap-up of the news of the week that I would produce and do a video for, and it just became 3 hours of pre-production and then 3 hours of post-production, and too much.
A typical podcast, in other words.
Properly.
I can speak to this one personally.
Yeah. Anyway, but it came down to every once in a while, somebody had suggested making the drinking game where Istanbul or Constantinople is a drinking offense. So Constantine would come up or some reference would come up. And Dallin, didn't you say that like it was like seven in one show one time?
Oh, jeez.
I'm not sure what you were doing, but the talk of Constantinople was going on constantly. And this was my fault.
You were blitzed.
And I finally said, okay, new drinking game. Every time Shujin says Constantinople, you take a drink. And I spat it out there as a joke. This guy glommed onto it, and 6 years on, it's still going.
Every once in a while.
And then once in a while, he would play the song from the Giants.
I get very, very drunk.
Yeah. See, you guys haven't played the My Book of Mormon podcast.
No, no, not yet. No.
See, that's why I love
you, my liver. Okay.
For the show that we do on Fridays, my kind of thing is I usually find top 10 lists of some sort or something resembling a top 10 list.
Oh God.
And times out of 10, out of all the ones that we've done, I would say probably 7 of every 10 have had something to do with history, and there's always mention.
Yeah.
Sooner or later.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there was one night there. I had a couple of bottles of beer with me. Yes, sometimes I do drink when we do these shows. And sometimes that coffee thermos you see has a lot more than coffee in it. But these jokers get into one of these lists, and of course, I'm limited as to how much beer I have, so I decided that the smart thing would be to whip out the 2-ounce shot glass. Let me tell you something. Knocking back 2-ounce shots of beer, even though it's only like 5% alcohol, is a great way to make you glad that at the time your bed was right behind you. See, now in my new place, I actually have to go across my living room. So, I can crawl. I can crawl, though. It's a nice carpeted floor, so I can crawl. So I'll be okay. I just don't have a beer with me tonight.
I would just like to emphasize, this is what happened at the last time we had one of those running gags going on.
Oh my.
So let's not do that. We're about an hour into a theoretically 90 or so minute show. Thank you for sticking it out with us. We truly appreciate it. You're watching Holy Crap, the vlogcast. We're ostensibly talking about why we should not be or should be thinking of God as a magician because the Pope went ahead and did his thing. And yeah, we've kind of circled around a whole bunch of different things, and that's the way this show ends up. If you would like to comment, the question and answer system is always up and running. So if you have questions, by all means, feel free to throw them in there. Chris, who has been watching and chiming in, thank you very kindly. And if you are watching live, you know, take advantage of that. If you would like instead to perhaps send a message, email or text message with your phone, feel free. You can send those text messages over to area code 859-HCTV-554. It's 859-4288-554. Why the whole double number thing and the whole thing? Don't ask. There's a thing. I'll explain about it later. If you'd like to send an email over to me, you can send it over to shujintribble@gmail.com. I'm still tinkering with a couple of ideas as far as to how to add to our collection. We kind of talked about that last week, which I'm not sure where we're going to go with that just yet, but be that as it may. The idea of the magic piece, obviously enough, is problematic because that kind of flies into the face of everything that we've been taught in religion before. And some of us have been lucky enough to not have it ingrained into us at an early age. Some of us have had to come through it, and as Seth has put it before, you know, chewed up and spit out the other side, which, okay, some of us can feel that way, and in some ways, understandably so. So, if it's not magic, where can we think that it might be? What could this ability go and be attributed to? Obviously, if we're going to go ahead and bring human terms into it all, we have to go with, and I know I'm going to get hell from it for Unrenowned Tech for it later, we can't rule out the possibilities of mutant power, in which case somebody has to bring up, of course, it's been a long running joke, but I don't really think that we need to shoehorn him in, do we? Do we really need to do this again?
No, we don't.
No. So, you know what? You silver-backed son of a sitch, you can just go ahead and just go away.
Oh, boy.
Look, yeah, it's either that or I go ahead and I actually use Amish Wolverine, in which case it's going to blow.
Damn it!
I did it, didn't I?
Maybe that should be this show's drinking game. What do you think?
No, because theoretically there should actually be a legitimate use for it instead of just shoehorning it in. But anyway.
It's either that or we'd have to come up with something. Like, since we didn't come up with it, every time it's said, we would have to make some kind of a donation to the Scathing Atheist where it originally came from. You know, pay for the license type of thing.
There is something that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Now, forgive me if I'm reading this the wrong way, but for the most part, my understanding is that you guys aren't necessarily in support of the Pope on his recent announcement. You guys are more or less saying, hey, this has been done before and this is nothing new. Yes, yeah. No, maybe so.
Yes, I'm yeah. Feeling that way, yeah.
Now, I can understand how you feel that way, and I'm not gonna tell you you shouldn't feel that way or whatever. I will say this much, though. As I mentioned earlier, I do have the utmost respect for Pope Francis, which is a rare thing for me and a person in a position of power and authority, let alone one of religious context. But look at it, but the way I see it, he is the first person of this caliber, as far as this position in the hierarchy goes, to make this suggestion. And that's putting a lot on the table for him. That is putting that's taking a lot of risk as far as he's concerned, compared with, you know, all of the folks underneath him who don't agree with that. This isn't the first thing that he's done this on either. He's been remarkably forward thinking for a Catholic clergyman in general, let alone the Pope.
That is a point, yeah.
I've kind of felt like, though, what he's making it sound like he's doing more than what he is. Like he's like the homosexual stuff, he's like saying, making it sound like we're being more accepting, but then when people say, wow, you're being more accepting, he's like, well, no, really, we're not, you know, we're no. And it just seems like he's paying lip service to something he's not really doing.
Well, to that point, by the way, he came out to say, stop being dicks. Effectively is what it comes down to. And I have no problem with using that terminology because it's Wheaton's rule and it encompasses a lot of different pieces, but it ends up with his, I want to be mean-spirited about it, but I really should not be in this particular context because the truth is a little bit better. The synod, which is effectively the board of directors, I guess is probably the best analogy that I can put, as I've understood it. Now, I could be wrong. Probably am. But if you think of it as a corporation, the Pope is the CEO, but the board of directors is really the group that – the ones with the actual power. Now, my thinking
– control the minutia.
Okay, my thinking about it may be flawed, so don't. But the way that I've been seeing it, Pope will go ahead and he'll say things, effectively invoking Wheaton's Rule 1. And then the synod will come back and say, well, hold on, this is what he really meant, and changes some terminology so that he's actually closer into where the Catholic Church has been traditionally, versus where he's trying to guide it to and basically undermining what he said and saying, you know, he didn't really know what he was saying.
Then why did God elect him?
And probably because they needed a burnt offering and all they had was incense. I don't know.
Because they had to make up for electing a... Oh, shouldn't make that joke, but
yeah,
I can't know help it. For they had to make up for electing a Nazi after a poll.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know what? The sad part of it is, I don't think that's nearly as much of a joke as what you are thinking of it being. I hadn't really thought of it in those terms before, but Jesus.
Well, and you know, he wasn't just a Nazi, but he also was head of the, I forget what the term is it was for now, but it basically was the Inquisition, whatever terminology they use now.
Technically speaking, no, he wasn't a Nazi. He was a member of Hitler, and this is to be fair, I have to be fair.
Yep.
We do have to look at it at all angles. Ratzinger was a...
He was conscripted.
Yes. Well, he was a member of the Hitler Youth. He was a child during that period. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't necessarily something you opted for.
No, it was the Hitler Boy Scouts.
You didn't volunteer, you were voluntold.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. And as much as a whole bunch of people got pushed into it, there is going in it because you were told, and then there is renouncing it later. The thing that pisses me off the most about it all is that he never got like a signature from the Red Skull or anything when all was said and done, which is real pain in the ass. And I'm only pulling that out because we went, the little one and I went, and we saw Big Hero 6 teams, whatever the hell it is, and Stan Lee made a cameo sort of at the end. So I don't know. But yeah, real quick before we get to the Q&A.
Yeah, I just have a real hard time with the, like you said, renouncing it, like signing a piece of paper from the Red Skull or something like that. I think back in those days, when it was all said and done, there really was no exit strategy for that. There was
no
public desire to do that. And the only reason this whole thing is coming up, like especially with Ratzinger, I think was just because, yeah, he was being put into a position of, you know, holiness and supreme goodness. And like any good U.S. smear campaign will tell you, when you're looking to elect somebody, the first thing you do is you go looking through all their trash. And for us to sit here and say, well, he never formally renounced it, and I'll bet you neither did the other 15 million people who are still alive who were part of that, because it never occurred to them at the time. It's like, hey, I was this, I'm not it anymore.
That's what I was kind of saying.
Do I really need my freaking paperwork to tell you this? I mean, yeah, the fact that he had ties to the Nazi Party back in the day, yeah, it's great ammunition for cynics and skeptics and just about anybody who doesn't like the Roman Catholic Church in general. But you know, if you're constantly doing that, I mean, I can draw a couple of parallels here in Canada when it comes to the natives, but that's for another time. In terms of this lingering legacy thing, it's like,
and to be fair, because I am the one that went ahead and slung that around. Mm-hmm. I meant it in jest. I truly did. So and I don't want anybody to think that I think that he is still at heart aligned with what Nazism was trying to accomplish. Not in any way, shape, or form. I don't know what he thinks at this point, other than he thinks that he's, entitled to Providence.
Yeah, I think he's pissed off that he became Pope during probably one of the most controversial times for them, you know, with all these allegations of...
Why did Ratzinger actually resign in the first place? I don't remember.
I don't think anybody ever really said.
I think he claimed something about maybe his age or his health, but the simple fact is...
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, the whole child-fucking thing, pardon my French, but it's called spade a spade. The whole abuse thing of the children blew up in his face, and... Either A, he didn't want to deal with it anymore, or B, the Vatican thought that he would be the perfect scapegoat, and by his resigning, everything would quiet down, which was the single biggest mistake they ever made. But, you know, that's what happens.
To be fair to him, and as I was saying before, this was not something he opted for. Mm-hmm. He was 14 years old when he was conscripted into the organization known as Hitler Youth.
Yeah.
He wasn't. He didn't even reach 18 before the end of World War II. So
and that's annoying, and that's, you know what, we can hold on to that for later, because the idea of being forced to do stuff before you are of majority. I think age of majority would probably be a good benchmark there.
Very similar to certain individuals being raised in a certain organization and then deciding later on that that organization was bullshit.
If you mean the Republican Party, sure. Yeah, we'll go with that one. Chris had put something over in the Q&A, and Chris, please forgive me. I'm gonna kind of paraphrase because the wording got really, really hard and clunky for me to try to follow. And for those of you that want to do one of these Google Hangouts with a Q&A sometime in the future, holy crap, and I'm not using that because I'm plugging us, trying to read, comprehend, and keep up a conversation at the same time. Wow, my brain gets a workout on this.
Now you know how I feel.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so in a nutshell, Chris is saying that the wording that's used in the Bible's accounts, and I'm from the way that he's putting it, I'm assuming that meaning the earlier versions closer to the origination point in whatever languages they might have been at the time, the translated words may be terms like creation and such, but they're effectively different words that are translated poorly later, so that stuff that is created, crafted, poofed into existence, whatever current English terminology you want to use, the verbiage is different for stuff that God existed. I'm using a very clunky term, I'm sorry. I'm trying to differentiate versus something that just suddenly occurred. For instance, the creation of the universe, suddenly the universe exists. This is one of those times where English nuance is not my strong suit, and the idea of talking through a concept like this where normally you wouldn't have the vocabulary for it is uncomfortable. Is the best way that I can put it. It's like trying to understand the way that the Doctor in Doctor Who tries to explain how time is wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey. It's a big bundle of stuff that's really difficult to understand and generalize. There's no proper verbiage for it in English because we don't deal with time in those methods.
Yeah, so, and in anything like that, language will always be a barrier. I mean, let's go back to the story of Lot. You know, that we may know him or know them. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I know you four or you three, but you know, when you put a couple thousand years worth of context in there, and it takes on a completely different meaning. So I kind of understand this.
Yeah, it's funny. Joe's the one who's drinking, and yet you're the one who's seeing double suddenly. What happened here, man?
Just give me a break, okay? Did I mention I moved?
Yeah, I think you might have.
Yeah.
And congratulations on that, by the way.
Yes, it's nice to finally get out on my own. Probably be here for a couple of years just to get a few more things in place and then finally move on to bigger and better.
Yeah, see, now I'm not the only one with the white wall and the corner background.
Yeah, I'm still working on the decor a little bit. It's really bad that the room I'm in right now, there's nothing on the walls. So waking up in the morning, it feels kind of institutional. Like I'm half expecting Gladys to start talking out of my radio.
Well, the same could be said about mine, but then again, the first 8 years of my adult life, I was used to living in essentially a room no bigger than the closet I have right now. So with everything that I own fitting into a single footlocker.
Oh, yes. Wow.
Yes. And and some of us know full well what you were like sleeping at AC in a closet size.
Probably because it was a closet.
It is a closet, and now for once it's being used as a closet. Okay, there's probably some questions being brought up now. I live in a what is identified as an efficiency or studio apartment. That is to say, it is one big room with one corner of it kind of designated as a kitchen area. And then I have one large walk-in closet about roughly 4 feet by 10 feet. And then coming off of that is my bathroom. I had a roommate for a long time, about 2.5 years, of the opposite gender, of whom I was in a strictly platonic friendship with. So, for the sake of privacy, I allowed her to have free reign of the main room of the apartment, whilst I spent my time essentially in the closet. Make what jokes you will. But there was plenty enough room in there for a desk, my computer, and a cot, which, given the first 8 years of my adult life, was comfortable enough. And actually, I kind of miss it because that particular closet is quite warm during the wintertime.
Fair enough. And Chris, by the way, thank you very much for the added stuff over on that one. Chris is also apologizing that, you know, character limits and such in the Q&A is a little bit of a pain in the ass. And it's okay. It's okay. You got the point across, and that's the important part. Mm-hmm. You also followed it up by specifically saying it's a word specifically used for when God does stuff. And I get that. I mean, that makes sense. Most of us have not read I can only speak for myself on this one for a second. Let me retract what I was about to say. I have not read the Bible. I have listened to pieces of the Bible having been read to me. It is hellaciously mind-numbing, even when somebody else is trying to explain it. Even with Bill and Susie going through Barroom Atheist, which, by the way, guys, thank you very much. It's annoying, and they still make it really, really fun to follow. But I, again, can't speak for anybody else, but I don't find it at all appealing to learn ancient Greek or ancient Hebrew or ancient Sumerian or anything the frick else. In order to get a better, clearer understanding, I'm not going to learn Klingon in order to read Shakespeare in the original language, all right? That's basically what it comes down to.
Well, so, and I've said to many theists that I've tackled on Twitter and places, you know, if God has this incredible message that it is so important that people read and understand and know, why is it so easily diluted and changed and screwed up? Like, if he's omnipotent, then he should be able to write one that anyone could read in any language at any time and get the same damn message.
Yep, and that's something that ended up coming up with Noah and Heath. What would it take for you to think of God as all? And I mean, that was one of the ones that I'd come up with effectively, and I will admit it, Noah converted me from thinking the way that I was to thinking the way that he thought of it, because, wow, boy made a really, really smart point and shaved my neck off with Occam's razor. I don't know if anybody particularly remembers that one. He basically said, look, show me that temples or churches or something are less likely to be hit by lightning or by a hurricane, tornado damage or something. You don't get black mold in them ever. You know, something that you can just hang your head on, and I'll even go into the maybe category. And that made a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the response that I would always get to the why can't God write it so that everybody can get it, well, free will. Seriously, that's almost always the response I get. Yeah. Well, if it wasn't, if people couldn't corrupt it, then they don't have free will. I'm like, what? You can make the message, you know, perfectly clear, and people can still choose to say, forget it, I don't want to follow it.
Isn't like, there, my reading of Revelation is fairly old. It's been a long time since I looked at it. No. As I recall, there was a warning at the very end that if you took away or added words to this holy scripture, that bad things would happen either way.
Hmm. I'm pretty sure the Necronomicon says that too, but no, you don't see me losing sleep over that one.
You're right. But, you know, what I'm saying is, okay, so free will says we can't corrupt it, yet if you follow the rules of the scripture, you're not supposed to corrupt it.
Yeah.
So, again, it's the contradiction. Like, well, free will, but blind obedience. How does that work? Like,
yeah.
Okay, so you have free will. You choose not to follow it. Well, then you're in violation. You must be killed, or you must be this, you must be that. Like, well, okay, so then it doesn't give you free will.
Yeah, exactly.
All you have is the will to blindly obey. Well, no, you have free will. But yeah. if I use my free will to tell you to go pound sand, then you're saying I'm in violation of whatever God just told me that I can and can't do. Like,
yeah.
you can circle the drain on that one for eternity.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the mental gymnastics involved is pretty overwhelming.
Yeah, I've got mental gymnastics this big, and it's got Excedrin written all over it.
Joe, did you want to chime in on that one? Because I'm about to slam dunk that sucker.
No, you go right ahead.
Okay, I'll slam dunk that sucker. Dallin, what was the warning? Okay. You want to mute out your microphone otherwise?
Oh. Yeah, sorry.
No worries. Dallin, what was that warning again?
About adding or taking away words from the Bible?
Yes.
I can't remember it exactly, but I do believe it says something about if you add words, you prolong your own judgment. And if you take away words, I can't remember what it is.
That's okay.
I'd have to come back.
That's okay. I'm going to slam dunk this one with two words. King James.
Yeah.
Oh, don't get me started, please.
No, wait a minute. Did he or did he not change the words?
Oh, yes.
Well, the whole thing has been changed. How many? This book has been passed around like a joint on spring break, okay? You got King James, you've got...
You know, the funny part
Bible,
of it.
Well, you got the Good News Bible, which is the one I grew up with. And the fact that those two are written in English.
See, I'm finding that one really funny because we had a couple more states went ahead and said, yeah, pot, sure, go ahead, don't care.
I have the Revelation verse here if you like.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, so this is Revelation 22:18-19. For I testify unto every man that heareth the words of the prophecy of this book. If any man shall add unto these things, God shall add unto him the plagues that are written in this book. And if any man shall take away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God shall take away his part out of the book of life and out of the holy city from the things which are written in this book.
Which means, in a nutshell, congratulations, if you go ahead and you screw around with the book, you get to face the final boss and you get no take backs.
And no cheat codes and no perks.
Nope.
Yep.
The Konami code does not work for you. Tough shit.
Yeah. So, right there, they talk about, well, free will, you can corrupt it. But if you do, here's what's waiting for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, but it still comes back. What is it? It's not magic, or at least that's what the Pope wants people to think. And let's face it, the Holy Roman Catholic Church, the Big C, which is just crap to me, but that's whatever the hell, is trying to pass it off as it's not mere trickery. It's not magic. And some people will get that reference, some people won't. I actually got to see Doug Henning perform live in New York City when I was a kid, which was great. But if you don't know who Doug Henning is, you're young. But well, if it's not what we think of in lay terms as magic, and it's written as a different word in the older translations, what is it? I mean, is there a different lay term that any of us can think of? Because I've actually been racking ever since I thought of this this particular topic for, you know, three, four days now. I've been racking my head trying to figure it out, and I'm coming up with sweet FA.
I'm not entirely sure if I can come up with a word for it, but one way, and this is kind of the way I used to look at things when it came to, you know, God and what he's capable of doing. And I said it before near the top of the show, is like, to me, it's almost like the Matrix. The agents inside of the Matrix, if you recall the movie. Yes, it looked like they could perform superhuman feats, things that would be considered supernatural. However, all they were doing was they were working within the confines of the program code that they were a part of. So look at it from a, I hate to use this term, but like an elite gamer. No, you've gone up against these people, and it looks like they are cheating. And it's not that they are, it's that they are able to function so well inside that enclosed environment that it looks like they're cheating just because they know the system that well. Hmm. So the way I used to think about with God is that, yeah, he's working, but inside the confines of what we call the laws of nature. But he has the ability to use, to work within the very outside limits of it, which we as human beings cannot yet, because, like I said before, we don't have the math to pull it off, is what I'm saying. So I wonder if that's the bend that the Pope is trying to go with, to say, no, it's not magic. He's just damn good at what he does in our little enclosed system.
But then that would suggest that he's susceptible to, like, the laws of physics and things like that. And a lot of miracles are outside that. And again, that comes back to then, well, why would you ask God to, I don't know, cure your cancer when he's not necessarily able to do that? And I'm not talking, well, like, I know Catholics are praying to a bunch of different people, but I've never had anything to do with Catholicism. So yeah. To me, people pray, they pray to God or Jesus or whoever. Yeah. And so that's like, well, why bother if that's not what God is?
Well, and this could be where the rest of the Vatican is saying, no, that's not really what he meant. Like, I don't know if enough time has passed for us to have the backtracking yet on the part of the rest of the synod.
Yeah.
To say no, Frankie's talking out of his ass again.
Yeah, which is in and of itself, that is, you know, that, and that's something I want to investigate and talk about sometime too, because the idea that the Pope can go ahead and put out his decree on how things should be, mm-hmm. and he's the big boy. He's got the big hat for it all. And a group of guys who are effectively underlings can come back and say, nah, hold on a second. Let us tell you what he really meant. That's a whole discussion for later that I absolutely want to have. Mm-hmm. But that is for another time.
It does make me really wish that we could get a full-blown skeptic / like, I'm talking as close to atheist as you can get in that chair.
Yeah.
And really turn the synod on its ear.
That would be amusing.
Because I think that I think, you know, maybe Francis is riding that line. Like, he's trying to pull, he might be trying to pull the church into a more rational state, a rational way of thinking, but it's going to cost that church an awful lot of followers. And when you cost them an awful lot of followers, you're going to cost them an awful lot of money.
But when you think about it, they're already losing lots. I think that might be the impetus for some of these new ways of looking at things, is because they are starting to bleed people out of the churches.
Yeah, but the thing is, okay, so he's trying to do that to make the safe, you know, to bring it mainstream. But then the synod, who still believes in their sort of trickle down economic theory, you know, something has been debunked, but they hang on to it anyway. Gee, what else could I be talking about? Anyway, the simple fact is that they're just trying to hang on to the old ways, so that's why they're doing all the backtracking, which they might not understand this, but it makes them look even more stupid than, or it makes them look even more futile than they did before.
I don't think it's so much as looking futile. I think it's much more that they're trying to, the synod is trying to look more, I'm going to use this poorly, traditional.
Okay.
They want to keep the rank and file old guard Catholics because the Catholic Church does not like moving quickly.
Yeah.
It just never. I mean, hell, it took until the mid-60s, I think it was, for them to finally come to the grips of, well, maybe we should conduct the English-speaking area masses in, you know, local English instead of Latin now. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should really go ahead and do that. Mm. I mean, they threw a fit when the Bible was translated from Latin into the local languages of German, first off.
But that's to do with control.
Yes.
And historically, they wanted to keep the masses ignorant so that they had to go to the clergy to be told what to do.
Mm-hmm. Properly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And wow, this is getting off the topic. Wow, this is really something that we're going to end up talking about. but the I feel like they just, the overall upper of the Catholic Church, their overall average age is dirt.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Want things to change. Mm-hmm. Because when they do end up changing, they end up losing out of stuff, which isn't going to include, I want to say power, but it's not power, it's prestige.
Yeah.
The pull that they've got, and that's definitely something that they would never want to lose, ever. And that's definitely something that we're going to end up talking about in the very near future, because wow, that is a whole other rabbit hole that I don't know about you guys, but I love to go down there. And welcome back, Joe. You're okay?
Yeah, I just had a bit of a bio break.
No problem. Okay. So we're gonna see. Yeah, we're getting closer into 2 than 1.5 hours. So we gotta see about wrapping this all together. And I didn't wanna wrap without you. So
it's fine.
So Heretic Woman, I'm gonna give you the opportunity of putting out your last piece on this whole damn thing before we go ahead and just close up shop. What last pieces do you want to throw into this mix?
Well, like I say, I think Francis is trying to do a lot of damage control. He's trying to think outside the box. He's trying to come up with ways that, you know, younger people and more critically thinking people might be able to mentally gymnasticize religion into working. But as Dallin was saying, the synod isn't exactly agreeing with him. So, you know, and he's kind of emasculating God at this point. If he's saying, you know, he's not really a magician, well, then, as we said, well, what the hell is he? Why would we want to ask him to intercede? Why do we need him to forgive us? Like, what's the point if he doesn't have the power behind what you're supposed to be giving? You know what I mean? It just seems kind of pointless at that juncture. So, and I think that's why he's doing it, is he's just trying to make the save.
I hear that. Dallin, what last piece have you got?
growing up, I didn't know much about the Bible stories until fairly later on in life. Like I was maybe, and when I say that, I'm talking like I was maybe 7 or 8 when I saw the, when I finally read the story of Adam and Eve. And by that point, I'd already fallen in love with science. And I spent years trying to reconcile the two before I finally woke up. And it's my hope that with what Francis is doing, I realize he's, I know what he's trying to do, but he's doing it in kind of a desperate way without really thinking. And I'm hoping what he's done to a lot of people is he's lit the fuse that I've already gone through where, yeah, I did my time of mental gymnastics trying to reconcile the Bible with the natural world. And I've actually said, okay, the Bible is false. Like the whole Adam and Eve, that's just a fairy tale. And it is the natural world, it is the natural laws. That is what governs us. I'm hoping that by stirring the pot a little bit, by saying what he said and doing what he's done without really, really thinking about the impact on the Holy See itself, I'm hoping this is the beginning of the end of one of the largest religious institutions in the world. It will be cataclysmic when it falls, but I don't know. I'd be willing to sit on a deck chair, watch this, and eat popcorn, personally.
That should prove interesting. And Joe, what piece do you want to throw in there as the last?
I understand how you guys feel, and believe me, part of me feels the same way. But again, I'm not going to condemn this guy for, his statement, because the way I figure it, he's at least trying to find some common ground with people that he is trying to connect with, and doing so in a much better fashion than the Catholic Church has historically done so.
Admittedly.
That I will agree on.
That's all I got to say about that.
All right. So it all comes down to me to try to pull us all together, because that's traditionally what I try to do. And I will admit that this is one of those times where the subject itself is exceedingly, exceedingly difficult to try to even get a handle on, never mind make a hell of a lot of sense out of it. But believe it or not, I think that I've actually come up with an angle, as far-fetched as it might be, that would still make some kind of sense. And it's going to have to take a little bit of a stretch on this one, so bear with me a second. The idea kind of came to me through a couple of different things that have been said tonight, and the idea of a programmer exploiting their own codes, I've used that earlier tonight. Dallin making mention about a gamer who knows their stuff well enough that you could yell hacks and they can just go ahead and say, dude, this is all part and parcel. Okay, I get that. The idea of saying that God is not making magic happen, okay. I think there is perhaps the possibility, and that is the linchpin, that this makes sense. And that is the ideas that have come out saying how our universe, at its core, at its absolute minuscule level, is all about probabilities. Now, this is kind of stretching a little bit, because I'm taking out of stuff that we haven't talked about tonight, but Brian Cox, I believe it was, is a theoretical physicist who had some stuff on Nova and was talking about the quantum level world and the possibilities of multiple dimensions and multiverses and how things might be that you can actually have an electron in multiple places simultaneously, completely thumbing its nose at the reality as we know of it. That it doesn't orbit, it's in a cloud, it just blips in and out of reality. That along the event horizon of black holes, there are virtual particles that are simply created, that some fall in, some fall out. That there is zero point energy, that if you put two plates close enough together, you will see the force happen in between them, where virtual particles are bubbling through the quantum froth. And that's, I believe, the technical term, believe it or not. So here's the possibility. What if this universe is just a blank slate? At its core, it is just space. And that's not even the best terminology for it. What if it's a matter of that God is simply able to manipulate the probabilities? What if God is able to simply maneuver different probabilities of matter blipping into existence, building onto different chemical combinations, and those combinations happen to have their own laws that go along with them? That maybe, just maybe, there is something to the idea that stuff was actually crafted. Maybe not necessarily created, but crafted out of what's already been there, out of the quantum foam that is what we live in. That then opens up an intriguing possibility that maybe it isn't magic. Maybe it is technical in an aspect, although not necessarily exactly so, because manipulating the quantum phloem that this universe resides in starts to sound very Deepak Chopra-ish. It sounds like bullshit after a while, and I would agree. But there's some real stuff behind all that. So maybe God isn't a magician. Maybe God is the Scarlet Witch from Marvel Comics. Maybe God is the Black Cat from Marvel Comics. Maybe God is simply able to change the parameters. Maybe God is Q. Maybe.
No.
Maybe there is a possibility, a probability that can be tinkered with for all of these. But then, at the end of the day, we still all have to shave with the same razor. And once you do that, those probabilities fall apart. As always, thank you for your time. We know, I say it every time, we know this is not a sexy vlogcast like Scathing Atheist or a whole bunch of others, but as always, we really do think that we've got something worthwhile in our opinions and our perspectives. And thank you for taking the time to listen to them. Our next scheduled show is going to be this. By the way, this was November 9 Eastern Time. Our next one is scheduled for the 16th at this point. I don't believe there are any conflicts coming up as yet. The next conflicts are probably going to be happening up into March. With the holiday season coming up later into the winter for us here, summer in Australia, of course, we will have to play a little bit by ear because, I mean, come on, nobody wants to be watching a vlogcast in the middle of, you know, Festivus, for crying out loud, and I don't blame you one bit. But we will give you warning ahead of time if there is not going to be a show. And of course, if you're watching from the future, well, you know, you can just pick up the next episode whenever the hell you feel like it. I also need to make mention before I get on out of here that, believe it or not, for a change, I am going to be the interviewee, surprisingly enough. Over on Facebook, I'm going to be interviewed by, who the hell was it again?
Talking Wallflower.
Thank you. I was trying to remember, and I was looking up the thing, and it's slipping my head because it's a little bit late, and I'm kind of doing really good. Talking Wallflower on G+. You can also find the links over on my Facebook or G+ or Twitter accounts, because once those goals are live, I will let you know about it. He's going to have a little bit of good laugh at my expense because he sent me a list of questions that would usually come up, and I sent him my short answers so that he's got something to play off of, and he's like, no, you answer them later. I know, just give me something to play off of later. So I'm whatever. I'm not used to being an interviewee, all right? Fight me, I don't care. But in any case, thank you guys very much, as always. It's an interesting topic, trying to figure out what other people are trying to think of and understand what their motivations are and how things work. So if we've given you something worthwhile to think about, please, by all means, let us know. You can email me, shujintribble@gmail.com. Just use the name right down over here on the bar. If you want to hit me on Twitter or Facebook under the same, @shujintribble, all one word, shujintribble on Facebook. And if you would like to send a text message or voicemail, please feel free. The phone number on that, again, is 859-HCTV-554. And we can talk more about those numbers again sometime in the future. Thank you for your time. This is really, really tough on my brain sometimes, but man, it is so worthwhile. So, of course, as always, take very good care of yourselves. Hope you had a good Halloween. And, of course, as always, before I get out, say my goodnights for all of you and my goodnights for my lady. Because 9.5 years on, I am still in love. Matane Fujin, I love you and I miss you. Dream of me. And of course, for all of you, we'll see you again soon. Until the very next time we get together, everyone, as always, good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google+ pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.